It's been 5 years since I spoke during the Yom HaShoah service in Flint, Michigan, and nearly a decade since I participated in Jewish religious services in Massachusetts. Still, I recall singing for High Holy Days at Temple Isaiah in Lexington, Massachusetts, with great fondness. The days of awe were a touchstone in my spiritual calendar, a moment of reflection that was quite different from my usual spiritual practice, you know, reading the morning paper with a good cup of coffee and then shaking my head while trying to pay attention to my breath. Being at the synagogue for hours at a time, after weeks of choir rehearsals and personal preparation, disrupted anything that might have been routine in my own life. That being said, there is no way that I was at all Jewish. I was part of the Jewish days of awe as a friend, as a musician, as an artist, as a human being. But I'm not Jewish. I was not Jewish. I was an outsider. It's difficult sometimes to make comments about somebody else's religion, especially if you are an outsider. Still, it happens all the time. We hold our own opinions. We wonder how anybody could believe such a thing. Sometimes we imagine our own way of being to be, well, unique, maybe preferable, maybe superior. Sometimes our interreligious behaviors involve more than just sharing opinions. The tragedy of this summer in the shooting at a Sikh temple outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, stands aside the decision, for whatever reason, of a group of anti-Muslim extremists creating a video slamming the Prophet of Islam, stands aside the reaction of mobs to the insult perceived at the hands of America, stands aside from the death of American Foreign Service officers. Commenting about another person's religion these days can be a dangerous game. Still, our Unitarian Universalist religion claims as one of its sources the Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. And so today's brief remarks about the days of awe are meant to address more than what we believe, but rather like the person responding to the wake-up call in Becky's story, how is it that we act? The days of awe are an expression of the renewal of a covenant between a subject people and a sovereign. You might imagine that the renewal of a promise to a sovereign would be remembered in the story of the glory days of Israel, in a golden age when they were one united kingdom, one people, with a solitary king, an established capital and court, and a functioning ritual center. You might think that in the days of a renewal of a covenantal vow to a sovereign, that they would talk about the days when Saul was triumphant, or the days when David rose to power, or the days when Solomon rebuilt the social security apparatus and turned Israel into an efficient and, for its day, modern state. But that's not where the High Holy Days begin, no. Instead, it returns to an ancient promise. God speaks to the patriarch and matriarch Abraham and Sarah. God demands of Abraham the unthinkable gift to bind his own son, Isaac, and to prepare to sacrifice him. When Abraham obeys, God sees Abraham's unusual willingness to be a devotee of God. And God allows the boy to live and makes a promise to Abraham of a name and a nation and a land. Parenthetically, the feminists who would read this will say the good thing of this is this probably marks the moment in the story of this people that child sacrifice is absolutely ended. Now that might be a good thing in the history of the world, and yet to return to that story again and again can feel challenging. But that's not the end of the story. That's not the only place where the promise of the nation and the land and the name. Generations later, when a Hebrew named Moses in the story encountered a God who called him to lead a journey into the wilderness, to leave Egypt and her cities and to live in the wild, not in brick homes but in tents, not worshiping in a glorious temple but in a tabernacle that was taken down every time they moved. This covenant of a name and a people and a land was still not realized. And so to tell the story of the renewal of a covenant that doesn't yet exist is interesting to me. It says, too, that the religion was not a belief system, but a behavioral code. Again, just as Moses and his group hadn't quite reached what was promised in the covenant, they were asked to live day by day to a behavioral code, so can we, who have not yet reached the perfection of the covenant, find ways to live day to day. The days of awe recount the creation of this covenant, recite the expectations of people and priests in the enthronement of the sovereign. Our God, our King, is repeated again and again. The acts of God are named, especially in the acts of creation. The heavens are telling the glory of God, the psalm states, as if the storytellers and the humans are almost immaterial. The Creator is self-evident, even without our story. Creation itself says that God is powerful. The winds and the thunder and the rain that come from the sky are a God who is powerful and high and lifted up, and the people are awestruck. This is how we have the days of awe, this amazing moment to think that we are allowed to ponder the huge and powerful and distant things. And then the hymns to God are sung, the story of creation, the story of the creation of humankind from dust, that the awesome God shapes each of us, knows each of us, cares for each of us. That's at the heart of the days of awe. That the great God cares for me, cares for this select people, and then because this Creator is the Creator of all of humanity, maybe the covenant that we're celebrating is not just with this people, but with all people. It's a question that gets raised in these days. That God cares for not just the insiders, and God cares for how we behave in the world, down to the minutest detail of the food we eat, the clothes we wear, the threads we tie on our prayer shawls, the days during which we rest. This is the awesome and maybe unbelievable part of the days of awe. The days of awe from the head of the year on Rosh Hashanah to the days of atonement, the service of memory, the sealing of the book of life on Yom Kippur. These days restate, recreate, reaffirm a covenant which binds a subject people to their king. The days of awe are filled with majesty. And perhaps this is the place where we diverge. On the one hand, our understanding of democracy says that we don't need a king. Our understanding of democracy says that the people are sovereign. The people are sovereign. That's what my faith tells me. And on the other hand, our humanistic faith is extremely skeptical about the supernatural. Must there be a creator that is above creation? Must there be a single God who is all-powerful? Must there be a creator at all, or is the natural world self-creating, self-recreating, self-renewing, without a supernatural force? Our humanistic faith is skeptical about a lot of these questions. We're open to people finding their own answers, and we're really reluctant to say that this one answer is the one for all of us. Our humanistic faith recenters the conversation away from the God distant who established a covenant with Abraham and Sarah, and turns our attention to the covenant itself. Can we be a people who make a covenant without reference to God? And, importantly, during the days of awe, will it be awesome? Can we make a covenant, and will it be awesome? I submit that being a people of the covenant lies at the heart of what it means to be human. There are stories that we tell about ourselves that divide us into different camps, draw distinctions, and make some of us special. We can look around this room and see the chaos of different skin colors. We watch what people are wearing and observe different genders. We see people arrive by car and by bicycle and by bus and by walking and easily infer different social locations. We hear accents that tell us of different regional backgrounds. Differences and differences and differences are the way we live our lives. And yet, when we stop, and when we communicate deeply with one another, when we hear of the joys that people bring to living this life, when we speak about our dreams, when we talk about the hope we have for our children, or for some of us when we talk about what it means not to have children, or others to have lost our children, when we fear that we will be left alone, all these stories that we might share with one another, when we are really honest with one another, when we share deeply and inherently, we find a way to look at their unmistakable fact, this one fact, that is what it means to be human. That those feelings that we have, those aspirations we have, that hope we bring, that pain we bring, that's what a human is. And that includes all of us. All of us. And to me, that's awesome. That's powerful. We are powerful. We are capable. We have the knowledge and the desire and the ability to make promises to one another and to keep promises with one another and to seek and offer forgiveness when we break our promises and then to renew our promises, to make new ones, to forge covenants and restore convictions and recharge our intention. This power, this human power, is an awesome power to me. This acknowledgement of human capacity and the responsibilities that emerge from our capacity, this is an awesome power. Our capacity as a species to care for this awesome creation. Not to put off the care for the creation to some supernatural power who's going to make it all better. But for us to take on the mantle of responsibility ourselves for the poor people of the earth who are the most tied to the land and to the sea, for the animals and the plants with whom we cohabit this precious fragile, rare, even awesome planet, we carry this awesome capacity. I close with Marianne Williamson's thoughts from her book, A Return to Love, famously quoted by Nelson Mandela during his inaugural address. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light and not our darkness that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, famous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us. It's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. On these days of awe, in a Unitarian Universalist fashion, may we begin again. May we return to our covenants, to the first promises we made to other human beings, to the promise we made when we formed this church here in Baltimore, and when we joined this church, and week by week when we come back to this church, to return to our promises. May our faithfulness to this human community blossom in strength as we live toward justice in our community. And may, by our actions, our names be written and sealed in the book of life. That is my dream for us. Blessed be, may it be. Ashe, ashe. I love you. Amen.